Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. If you are watching on Ustream, hello. And if you're not, shame on you. But you can get us on your mobile phone now. There's an app for that. You can download it at Ustream.tv/mobile. So you can download the application and then watch this program live on your iPhone or your other, whatever other mobile device you have. Isn't that wonderful? Today is April 14th, and on this date in 1865, John Wilkes Booth jumped up on the stage at the Ford Theater, landed awkwardly on his left foot, which fractured his left fibula just above the ankle. He raised himself up, holding a knife over his head, yelled, "Seek Semper Tyrannis," which is now the Latin Virginia state motto, "Thus always to tyrants." Other accounts state that he also uttered, "The South is avenged." And Lincoln was shot, Abraham Lincoln, who died a couple of days later. There was a hearing today in Washington, sort of a prelude to a hearing coming up April 27th. But today, coal industry officials went to Capitol Hill with two messages for Congress. First, that coal is an important energy source that's essential to the nation's prosperity. And secondly, they said that safety remains a serious issue. How long ago was it, the mine explosion in West Virginia that killed 29 people? But these are mining capitalists. These are corporatists who care about as much about human life as you care about head lice. Michael Carey, president of the Ohio Coal Association, said, "Safety and environmental cooperation are core assets, core values for us." Yes, they sure are. How do they do this? How do they sit there at a congressional hearing and make statements like that? "Oh, core values for us, safety and environmental cooperation. Yes, 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 yes. That's what we're about. Oh, absolutely." Safety, by the way, is going to be the topic at that April 27th congressional hearing. And that might be the first public appearance of Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship, the guy who is directly responsible for the deaths of 29 miners. Directly responsible. But at the hearing today, Michael Carey was there along with Stephen Lear, chairman and CEO of Arch Coal Lear, and executives from Peabody Energy Corporation and Rio Tinto. Isn't that the one that was thrown out of Australia or something? Stephen Lear said, quote, "Coal is being used and will continue to be used around the globe. Coal helps billions of people around the world enjoy a higher standard of living than would otherwise be possible. Coal mining accounts for about 80,000 U.S. jobs," it says here, "and provides about 23% of this country's electricity. Coal also produces more greenhouse gas emissions per unit of energy than any other major fuel source." But never mind. Ed Markey, a Democrat of Massachusetts, who is the committee chairman, told these three murderous capitalists, quote, "I believe there is a successful future ahead for the coal industry, centered on safer and cleaner practices for your fuel, your workers, and for the earth." That's what Ed Markey said. Jesus, God. President Obama has made clear, now get this, Obama has made clear his preference for comprehensive climate legislation that would take into consideration just about every aspect of this critical issue. But in the meantime, the EPA is moving ahead with regulations, which is what the EPA is supposed to do. In October, last October, the EPA announced plans to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from the country's largest emitters. That would be some coal companies, you think? Yeah, I think so. Earlier this month, the EPA announced new permitting guidelines for Appalachian mountaintop removal. This is where they essentially chop off the tops of mountains in order to get to the coal and throw all the debris into the environment, into rivers, lakes, streams. It kills everything. You want to know more about this? Check out Bob Kincaid's program, headonradio.com. Head On Radio Network? I think it's headonradionetwork.com. It's on the internet. Anyway, Kerry, this guy Kerry, of Michael Kerry, president of the Ohio Coal Association, commenting on Obama's plans to try to write or get Congress to write some comprehensive climate legislation, Kerry said, quote, "The Obama administration's..." Now, I want you to tell me how many right-wing capitalist death cliches you hear. "The Obama administration's regulatory assault on energy production and the war on coal, in particular, is creating a de facto Obama energy tax on all American families." End quote. Isn't that cool? One sentence. "The Obama administration's regulatory assault and the war on coal." A war on coal. I'll be damned. I didn't know there was a war on coal. Huh. I thought coal had a war on the planet. My misunderstanding. "And an energy tax on all American families." Well, I'll be damned. Supporters of action to limit greenhouse gas emissions and preserve life on Earth say the coal industry has a choice. Representative Jay Inslee, a Democrat from Washington, said, quote, "If you will take this lifeline that we have now sent the industry in this bill by sending billions of dollars to support research and development, then coal can have a future. And if you don't, it won't." Now, what does that mean? Congress has appropriated $60 billion for technology that would technology used to capture and store carbon emissions. That's a provision written into the climate bill passed by the House last summer. It's not law yet, but it's been passed by the House. Gregory Boyce of Peabody Energy, the largest American coal company, said, "Oh, no. Affordable technology should be available before regulation. We have to take the time to get this right." Isn't that what they always say? "Don't rush us. We're working on this." However, supporters of a cap on emissions point to the 1990 Clean Air Act, which placed a cap on the emissions that cause acid rain. Emissions fell faster and a lower cost than predicted. I can remember that back in 1990. Oh, my God, you're going to put caps on the amount of sulfur we can throw into the air? Oh, it'll destroy the industry. Oh, my God. Well, it didn't destroy the industry. The industry is very profitable for the capitalists, not so profitable for the people who die in the mines. But what it did do was reduce the amount of sulfur dioxide in the atmosphere, which reduced the amount of acid rain, which, well, you know. A little bit more when we come back. We're going to take a break. Are we taking a break? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Go to HuffingtonPost.com/Mike-Malloy, and you'll see Kathy's blogs, plural. There's two there. And if you comment, all you right-wingers, you know, use your F word and your SOB word and your I hope your daughter dies stuff. Do it, because when you comment at the Huffington Post site, it moves us into a better position, right? I think it does anyway. So all you little right-wing trolls, please go to HuffingtonPost.com/Mike-Malloy and read Kathy's writing, and then write things in the comments section about, you know, all your hate-filled garbage. Will you do that for me? Thank you. Anyway, back to this hearing today, House Committee hearing on coal safety. And the three CEOs that were there said that safety and environmental cooperation are the core values for the coal industry. Yeah. Okay. All right. The hearing also included a round robin about the science of climate change. And even though the witnesses acknowledged that the atmosphere has seen a recent spike in carbon dioxide concentrations, only Rio Tinto, which has been divesting itself of U.S. coal assets, declared human activity as a major factor in that increase. The rest of them, no, it's sunspots. No, it's not human activity. No, of course not. It's something else. You know, we've talked a lot on this program about the wall, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in D.C. Almost 59,000 names there of dead Americans. And, you know, without even considering the 2.5 million dead Vietnamese, which I don't mean to do here, but I'm just talking about dead Americans. We've talked many times about how all those Americans who died in that horrific war, all the hundreds of thousands who were grievously wounded, all the thousands upon thousands that committed suicide or became alcoholics or wound up homeless for an invasion of another country based on global chess games between the United States and the Soviet Union at the time, and in the interest of corporate America. That's the only reason we were ever in Vietnam. It's the only reason we're in Afghanistan. It's the only reason we're in Iraq. And we've talked about the waste of human life, American human life, that war brought about. Well, now it's happening in Afghanistan. This is from MSNBC and the New York Times. In Afghanistan, a place called the Korangal Outpost, and the last American soldier left that base today. It's a place that came to be called the Valley of Death. You can guess why it was called the Valley of Death. Near daily battles there, the battles were won, which means nothing, but almost always there were dead Americans and wounded Americans as a result of those battles. There were never enough soldiers to crush the insurgency, and after 4 years of trying, it has become clear to the people who are responsible for these corporate wars that there was not much worth winning in this valley. There's really nothing there. So closing the Korangal outpost, which to the people in Afghanistan was a powerful symbol of some of the war's most ferocious fights, might be a potential harbinger of America's retreat. And it is a tacit admission that putting the base there in the first place was a monumental mistake. It's also part, closing it is also part of an effort by General Stanley McChrystal, who is the supreme commander in Afghanistan, to consolidate and refocus his forces in places where they might change the momentum of what has become a losing situation. Now, where do you suppose he's going to refocus them? The cities. The population centers, where we'll have more school buses blown up, more private residences reduced to rubble with a couple of Hellfire missiles, more wedding parties turned into hamburger meat. Incredible. We'll be right back. I feel so good that I want you to know.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It is 26 before the hour. Anyway, back to this story carried by MSNBC and the New York Times. We're already starting the bug out in Afghanistan. According to the Times, fighting for isolated mountain valleys like Korangal outpost, even if they are hideouts for clusters of Taliban, is no longer sustainable. And fighting those areas did more to spawn insurgents than defeat them. You know, another recruiting tool. McChrystal figures it's better to put the soldiers in cities and towns where they can protect people and help them connect to the Afghan government. Now, we know what happens when an armed fighting force enters into a civilian center populated by people who don't want us there. Usually the people wind up dead. School buses are blown up. Cars that approach checkpoints too fast or too slow are blown up. If there are children inside, gosh darn it. Well, we really do regret that. Somebody send a telegram to Hamid Karzai and tell him how much the American people and the U.S. military truly, deeply, honestly regret the killing of a whole clutch of children. We didn't mean it. Gosh darn it. bastards. 42 Americans died fighting in the Korangal outpost. That's official numbers. Obviously, it's going to be higher than that. Hundreds were wounded. Those are military statistics. And now we're bugging out. Specialist Robert Soto, B Company 1st Battalion, 26th Infantry, is quoted in this article. He spent 12 months in the Korangal Valley. He said, it hurts to see the withdrawal on a level that three units from the Army, we all did what we did up there. We all lost men. We all sacrificed. I was 18 years old when I got there. I really would not have expected to go through what we went through at that age. And then he said, it confuses me why it took so long for them to realize that we weren't making progress up there. During the period that Soto was there, 12 months, half his platoon was wounded or killed, according to the unit's commanding officer. So here we are again, involved in a military action that is literally pointless. There is no reason to be there. The people don't support us. The corrupt government wants us out. And yet we're going to continue to send people there to kill and be killed. We're going to continue to send people there to be blown, have their heads blown off, their arms and legs blown off, until little by little we retreat. And then another 50, 60 Americans are dead, and we retreat. And then hundreds more wounded, and we retreat. Let me just ask a very simple question. Why don't we just leave now? And regarding the mine disaster in this country, Kathy in Maine writes, I just heard that the Charlotte Gazette, that would be Charlotte, North Carolina, I think. I just heard that the Charlotte Gazette had a detailed story about the latest mining disaster. In it, they apparently pointed out that because of the lawyers for Massey Energy dragging out the appeals, the miners were subjected to extremely unsafe conditions at the mine. The owners knew in January that the mine could blow because the methane was not being exhausted correctly. The Gazette suggests that when a mine is operating unsafely, it should be shut down while the appeals go on. The men would not have had to die and leave their wives and children behind, and the appeals would likely not go on so long. What a freaking shame. Kathy in Maine. Yeah, the appeals that she's talking about, Massey Energy was cited for literally thousands of safety violations, some of which were deadly serious, we now know. And every single time, rather than just fix the problem, these rancid capitalist murderers would appeal these decisions, take them into court. Well, this time, when they took them into court, 29 miners are dead. Dozens of families are ruined. And you people wonder, some of you right-wing morons wonder why I say capitalism is a murderous, filthy, disgusting, anti-family, anti-life, anti-human enterprise. Dumb asses. Okay. This is going to freak out these white race supremacists, you know, the people who say, well, we got to protect and preserve the white race. I don't know why. You know, Kathy and I have talked about this before. You ever been out and about and you see a couple, mixed race couple, and they have children? It can be any combination of white, black, brown, whatever, parents, Asian, Middle Eastern, Latino, African, European. But when you see the couples out and about with their kids, if they have kids, and the children invariably are gorgeous. You ever notice that? They're beautiful. Well, guess what? In the largest study of its kind, Dr. Michael Lewis of Cardiff University School of Psychology, that would be in the UK, collected a random sample of 1,205 black, white, and mixed race faces. Each face was then rated for their perceived attractiveness to others, with mixed race faces on average being perceived as being more attractive. Dr. Lewis, who will present his findings to the British Psychological Society's annual meeting, actually it was today, said, quote, previous small-scale studies have suggested that people of mixed race are perceived as being more attractive than non-mixed race people. This study was an attempt to put this to the wider test. A random sample of black, white, and mixed race faces was collected and rated for the perceived attractiveness. There was a small but highly significant effect, with mixed race faces on average being perceived as more attractive. Now, the study could also have wider implications than just attractiveness. First established by Charles Darwin in 1876, heterosis, or hybrid vigor, okay? Take the best qualities of two examples of the same species. It's a biological phenomenon that predicts that crossbreeding leads to offspring that are genetically fitter than their parents. Now, remember, survival of the fittest has nothing to do with strength. It has to do with how you fit into the environment. As heterosis is considered to be a universal biological effect, it's possible that humans also are subject to its influence, and it helps explain why mixed-race people appear to be more attractive, because they are going to be more successful, they're going to live longer, they're going to be healthier, a million reasons. So all you white supremacist freaks out there with your camo and your rifles, boom, 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 boom. Oops. Bad news for you dumbasses, right? We always knew y'all were ugly anyway, but this kind of sews it up, doesn't it? Dr. Lewis said the results appear to confirm that people whose genetic backgrounds are more diverse are, on average, perceived as more attractive than those whose backgrounds are less diverse. This can be taken as evidence for heterosis among human population groups. It also goes beyond attractiveness. This comes from the observation that although mixed-race people make up a small proportion of the population, they are overrepresented at the top level of a number of meritocratic professions like acting, Formula One racing, and, of course, politics. Gee, wouldn't you rather just be a purebred white person, huh? Wouldn't that be much more fun with your great big old beer belly and your cigar? And you could talk about them Negroes and them immigrants and them weird people. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico writes in, more evidence that Massey Energy could reasonably foresee trouble before the disaster. It came out today that Massey bought workman's comp and disability insurance in March, whereas previously they had been a self-insurer. Corporate America, you gotta love them, huh? Right? You gotta love them. From Orem, Utah, a Utah-based company that operates call centers in seven states has just paid $500,000 fine, civil penalties for child labor violations. The company is called Western Watts Center, Inc., W-A-T-S, Western Watts Center, Inc., and they were cited by the Department of Labor for employing children too young to work and allowing children to work longer hours than allowed by law, the ones that were old enough. The penalty was among the highest of the kind ever assessed against a U.S. company. The company said it settled the complaint amicably and said that many of the violations were, you know, technical. The company said it was working to improve internal controls before it was under a government investigation a year ago. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we knew about this. We were fixing it. Yeah, we were. Settlement was announced today, although the company said the fine was paid way back in December. This old stuff. This old stuff. Regulators have said that they found it unusual that Western Watts was employing so many young children to make cold calls to adults, you know, telemarketing. In all, the company was cited for violations involving 1,482 minors under the age of 16. Minors, M-I-N-O-R-S. The infractions date to 2007 and 2008 in call centers in Utah, Arizona, Idaho, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wyoming. So you don't have to go to the Mariana Islands to find U.S. corporations who employ child labor illegally. I mean, this is the year 2010. Western Watts does market research and political surveys. I wonder for what flavor politician, huh? Three of the teenage employees were 13 and too young to work except on farms. The others, all 14 or 15, were found to be working more than 3 hours on a school day or more than 8 hours on a weekend day. Western Watts, W-A-T-S, characterized violations as an oversight. It was just an oversight. 1,482 times over a period of a couple years. Just an oversight. It said one 13-year-old who was stuffing envelopes is the daughter of a corporate executive. The other 13-year-olds were dismissed after the company said it determined they were too young to work. How do you determine? Don't you just look at the damn application? Doesn't it say name, address, phone number, who to call in case of emergency? How old are you? The company released a statement to the Associated Press today saying that by the time it settled the complaint, quote, we had implemented a full remediation plan, which is fully operational, end quote. The company said no child was employed against his or her will. These were all volunteers. Can you believe this? Of course you can. This is what corporate America does. This is what... I'll bet you anything the company is owned by Mormons. What do you want to bet? Orem, Utah? Please. I doubt if it's owned by Protestants or Jews. I know it's not owned by Muslims. Maybe Scientologists. They're almost as bad as Mormons or Catholics or, you know. Oh, we knew about the violations. We were in the process of correcting everything when that damn old government came in. And see, this is the Sarah Palin crowd. This is what the libertarians want. No rules, no regulations. Why should there be rules and regulations? I mean, if a kid has to go to work, why not go to work for a call center? Why not go to work for one owned by good, God-fearing Christians? Well, not really Christians, Mormons. Why not stay out of the way, government? Let the magic of the marketplace work, like in the coal mines. Why have regulations? Why have safety stuff? I mean, it just gets in the way, right? If enough people die at Massey Energy, well, the magic of the free market will just dictate that people don't go into those mines. Huh? Too much government. That's the problem. Listen to Sarah Palin and the baggers. Too much government. You know, a working kid is an alert kid, for God's sake. Hey, start the music. Get me out of here. I want to take a break. We'll be back after the break, all right? Stick around. We have two more hours of this. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour, this is the Malloy Show. Again, if you want to watch this program, the video streaming on your mobile phone, there's an app for that now. You download it at Ustream, that's letter U, stream.tv/mobile, and you can watch the program live on your phone or other mobile device. Also, Kathy's blogs now appear at Huffington Post. Just go there and look for, what is it, The Malloy Show? The Malloy?
I think so, or just Mike.
Or Mike Malloy, whatever. And leave comments when you go there, because the more comments, it puts us in a better position, and yada yada. And you right-wingers who like to talk about the death of my daughter and how you'd like to see me have sex with my own child, right, you right-wingers, instead of emailing me that stuff, why don't you put it on Huffington Post? Just leave a comment, because that's the type of person you are, right? Can you believe that? Oh, you've heard much worse than that. That's nothing. You know, you ought to see some of that Kathy and I get here. It's incredible. And that's because we are, I don't know what, we must be beasts to warrant that kind of... All right, from our economic affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2 to you. Gold-plated spider hole. Prairie 2 writes, J.P. Morgan Chase, the spider hole Jamie Dimon lives in, posted a $3.3 billion first quarter profit today, despite allotting $7 billion to cover losses on its consumer credit divisions. How does a bank lose that much money and still make billions? A big part of it is the special accounting rules and tax credits it gets from foreclosing on homes, thanks to a parting shot from the Bush crime family. But the cash flow to keep their $17 billion in bonus checks from bouncing comes from its investment bank division. The big banks all have investment bank divisions and are churning the markets to drive up stocks that they own so they can in turn sell to the managed funds who have no choice but to invest. That's why the stock market is up above 11,000 now. Another cash cow is high-speed trading with built-in programming, a built-in programming bias so they can buy any stock their clients want, a split second before the price increase is recorded and then resell it at a profit. So you and I can't do that. Jamie Dimon let go with a blistering tirade last month in his annual letter to shareholders. He criticized the, his word, demonization of big banks and argued for the economic benefits of outsized financial institutions. But when under oath, he maintains complete ignorance of the working of the economy or why the subprime mortgage securitization financial derivative scheme his bank was running collapsed the world economy. He does seem to know enough about it to declare today that if Congress allows the Commodity Future Trading Commission to regulate those same derivatives, it will cost his bank $2 billion. Oh! Attorney General Eric Holder told the Senate Judiciary Committee that he expects more trials for the people responsible for the financial collapse. Really? The FBI warned everybody 2 years before the collapse that mortgage brokers were committing systemic fraud. And the attorneys general of all 50 states tried to curtail the practices of the big mortgage banks, but the Bush administration invoked a law from 1863 to take away state oversight of nationally chartered banks. A new law that had not been used since Lee surrendered to Grant. Or a law that had not been used since Lee surrendered to Grant. Oh, and federal oversight of these big banks was exactly none. Speaking of the Confederacy, Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, asked Attorney General Holder why there hadn't been more show trials for alleged white-collar criminals. It's not clear if he was being dismissive of Holder. He didn't call him boy. Or if this is just the way a jackbooted thug like Cornyn thinks the Department of Justice should work. If the Republicans weren't holding up over 200 appointments, including senior positions at the Department of Justice, there might be some of those show trials to watch. Prairie2.com. Prairie2.com. I love it. The Bush crime family took away from the states the power of state attorneys general to regulate nationally chartered banks. The Bush administration said, no, the feds will do that. And then the feds did nothing. But you know what? According to, I'll get to this later. I'll get to that later. According to Beck and the rest of these psychotic pigs, it wasn't the financial services industry that tanked everything. It was Acorn. Now, regarding the mixed-race children being not only more attractive, but also stronger in a number of ways, Charon writes, Mike, you might say the hybrid vigor. Hybrid vigor is what you get with hybridization within a species, is the opposite of inbreeding. See, what the white supremacists want is inbreeding. The reason inbreeding, Sharon writes, produces bad results is the frequency of negative genes which pair up, and then the weak or undesirable trait becomes a phenotypic reality. What's a phenotypic reality? Do you know?
It'd be a little hard to explain, probably, but there's genotype and phenotype, and one is your actual genetic makeup, and the other is the expression of that makeup through your appearance and your physiology, and that's the phenotype.
Thank you. With different races, Sharon writes, there are different alleles, A-L-L-E-L-E-S?
Alleles, baby.
Alleles?
Would you like me to come read it?
You should read this.
Alleles?
With
Is
different
it like
races,
a
there are different alleles, and the negative pair-up for various traits hardly ever happens because of the different genetic pool. Hybrid vigor is a reality in all species, but most notable in mammals, especially humans. Well, there you go. I never heard of an...
Allele?
I've heard of a ukulele. Well, it looks like ukulele without the U.
Allele.
What is it called?
An allele.
Allele. That's the first time I saw the word meme. I thought, what the hell is a meme? Look, I don't claim to be the brightest bulb of the marquee. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of stupid.
You're not stupid. You're so cute.
Rush Limbaugh is the smart one. It's hard for me. You know, I see a word that looks like ukulele, I'm going to pronounce it that way.
He's got some messed up alleles, I'll tell you.
Alleles?
Yeah, he could use some hybrid vigor.
Yeah. Yeah. What else we got here? I've got all kinds of stuff, but some of this stuff is so damn involved. For me, because, you know, I say allele. I guess you heard about Sarah Palin's, excuse me? A document fished out of a California State University trash bin last week has now resulted in a state investigation in California into the university's foundation arm and its refusal to disclose details related to Sarah Palin's upcoming speech at the school. I'll tell you more about it in just a second. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
I want to live in a country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot. Now riding in your limousine. Words are meant to bend. Bigger, better, stolen from Japan.
21 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. Sarah Palin. Yeah, in a trash bin at a California State University. CSU Stanislaus. I don't know where that is. But anyway, on a tip, a student reached in there and pulled out Sarah disclosure details related, like a contract related to the hoe from Wasilla's upcoming speech at the school. And yesterday, California Attorney General Jerry Brown said his office will look into the finances of the Cal State Stanislaus Foundation, Cal State University Stanislaus Foundation, as well as allegations that the nonprofit organization violated public disclosure laws by keeping details of Palin's contract secret. Now, Palin is scheduled to speak. I'll get the other part later. At a June 25th event hosted by the Stanislaus Foundation to mark the university's 50th anniversary. What prompted this investigation was the students who retrieved 5 pages of the contract from a garbage dump after hearing that administrators were engaged in shredding documents. Don't you love Sarah Palin, huh? Isn't this crazy bitch? I mean, just the absolute epitome of right-wing crazy people, isn't she? I mean, come on. Yeah, I've got a whole file on Sarah Palin here. $12 million she's made this year. And, you know, Joe Sixpack and his wife Farthead don't seem to care about that, you know. I'm a teabagger. I'm a moron. And they don't say, this is a sign. Oh, it's got a picture of Barack Obama with the little Nazi Hitler mustache. Sarah Palin made $12 million. Oh, well, I don't care. Detailed in this agreement is what's required for this woman's visit, including first-class flights from Anchorage to California, if she flies commercial. If not, she wants a private aircraft, and it must be, all caps, a Lear 60 or larger. She must be provided with a suite and 2 single rooms in a deluxe hotel near the campus. During the speech, her lectern must be stocked with 2 water bottles and bendable straws. They have to be bendable. Yeah, our 5-year-old likes those. The document does not include compensation details for Palin, who normally gets as much as $100,000 in appearance. The tickets are selling for $500 each. She's a person of the people. Hey! Aren't y'all tired of all that hopey, changey stuff? Give me your money. Aren't you? Hiya, hiya, step right up, huh?
See the lady with 5 children.
Yeah.
Home named after trees.
After trees. Are you saying that on the air? Oh, you're saying that just, oh, okay.
I said, hiya, 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 step right up. See the lady with 5 children, all named after trees and branches and rivers and lakes.
The foundation board president, Matt Swanson, did not immediately respond to requests for comment on Brown's investigation. He previously told the Associated Press that the contract's strict non-disclosure clause prevented him from sharing it, and that university foundations and other auxiliary organizations were not subject to the same public records requirements as the university itself. No, 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 no. Oh, God. Well, a little Watergate in the state of California. You know, eventually, Palin will be found out. The teabaggers won't care. You know, they're so brain dead, they couldn't care less.
You know, maybe someday I can make $12 million. What? In a year. Are we not supposed to make money, Mike? You're a typical socialist. You're a communist. You want to take all our taxes. You want to, I don't know what you want to do, but you want to do something bad. You betcha. I know you do, Mike Malloy. You're just a creep. You're one of them liberals, aren't you? Huh? Hey! Woo! Ha! God! Oh, Scott Brown, the new senator from Massachusetts, Republican. When plans were made about this rally that was held today in Boston with Sarah Palin as the speaker, and gosh darn it, she's a good one. Scott Brown was invited
by Palin's staff, and he said, nah, I think I'll pass. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Have we got music playing?
Library books into a big bonfire got my eyes. This really might be our demise, this pack of lies. Instead of Palin, just because you're good at shooting doesn't mean you have the ammo to negotiate with Putin. Are you on coke? This country's up in smoke. Oh, what a joke.
It is 25 before the hour. Michael writes in, the interesting thing about Palin's flight requirements, it guarantees third leg return to Alaska, meaning that they had to fly her from Alaska to Sacramento and also would have to pay for travel to any second destination she chose, then return from that destination back to Alaska. She's come a long way from filching pencils from the city of Wasilla, hasn't she? Yeah, it's just, you know, it's a super hustle. You've got to admire, to a degree, you admire, I do anyway, somebody in a real perverted kind of way, somebody who can pull off that kind of a scam. You know, I'm a great fan of Mark Twain's, and some of the stuff he used to write about scams was priceless. And Sarah Palin is one of the best scam artists, I think, to come down the pipe in a long time. Let's do Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Got some music over there? Here we go! There's that sweet music. It's time once again, True Seekers, for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Here on this nice warm spring night, deep in the heart of Dixie. Tonight, Uncle Mike's Story Corner is titled The Great Happy Vatican Death Spiral. And it's written by one of our favorite writers, Mark Morford. Is it almost time? Can we finally start making preparations? Send out a global Evite welcoming millions to a grand ritual down by the beach. A fantastic ceremony featuring copious amounts of fire and cake, dancing and vodka, Shakti icons, and free condoms for all? Verily is the Catholic Church and its dark, nefarious heart, the Vatican, with its attendant red-robed apologist, unreformed child rapist, and a leader who is, as Richard Dawkins rightly declares, quote, a leering old villain in a frock who spent decades conspiring behind closed doors for the position he now holds, a man whose first instinct when his priests are caught with their pants down is to cover up the scandal and damn the young victims to silence, end quote. Is it safe to say this archaic and vile institution is finally nearing its end? How grand to imagine, even for a moment, even if you already sense it's damn near impossible, even if you think the church still does some good in the world somewhere, how utterly uplifting to think that finally, after all these centuries of lies and oppression, intolerance and cover-up, that one of the most dangerous, insular, religious monoliths in the world could come tumbling down in a smoldering heap with something fluid, feminine, and utterly transformational to spring up in its place. You want a true second coming? A big happy slap of the rapture? There you go. I am nowhere near exaggerating. At present, it's nearly impossible to keep track of all the accusations, evidence, grim letters, bogus apologies, and cover-up conspiracies not to mention the hundreds, if not thousands, of newly emerging claims of child rape and abuse that are winging around that holy place, coming in from all over the world as dozens of old white men in robes scurry about trying to deny it all and protect the kingdom at all costs while the flames lick ever closer. Hell, I'm still trying to stomach three of the largest and most nauseating scandals to erupt in the past year or so. One, the staggering revelation of 60-plus years worth of sexual abuse and beatings of countless hundreds of orphans at the hands of Irish nuns and priests dating back to the 50s. Two, the nearly 200 deaf boys sexually molested in Wisconsin over the course of nearly 25 years by a single priest, Reverend Lawrence Murphy, a man who should have died in prison, but who, due to the Vatican's reticence and equivocation, led by Pope Benedict, instead went to his grave entirely unpunished as a full priest. And three, the unconscionable tale of a priest named Stephen Kiesel of Oakland, who confessed to tying up and raping numerous children, who himself recognized his own vileness and begged to be defrocked, but who a then Archbishop Ratzinger insisted stay put for many more years to avoid bad PR. He therefore continued to rape and molest unpunished, even returning years later to work as a youth minister. Put in its simplest terms, the current pope had full knowledge that one of his priests was raping children and did nothing to prevent it. You'd think that would be enough. You'd think that might be sufficient to turn the stomach of the world, sufficient to overthrow the dour regime once and for all. Of course, those horrors are just the tip of the repellent iceberg. Pull on a few threads and watch in horror as a string of lies and cover-ups, 2,000 years long, uncoils like a tapeworm, revealing centuries of hypocrisy and shame. As for Pope Benedict, well, he's increasingly revealed to be one of the most power-hungry, ruthless, ultra-conservative popes in recent history, with new facets of his ugliness being revealed by the week. It brings up once again, and for the millionth time, a time-honored question. How much is enough? Will there ever be a point when all the scandals and lies, rape and abuse, finally crash over the enormous legal and pseudo-moral walls that religions are allowed to put up to protect themselves from persecution and justice, with waves high and powerful enough that they could wash away the Vatican once and for all? The answer is, of course, almost zilch. There's no chance whatsoever. The Catholic Church is simply too enormous, entrenched, global, powerful. What's more, Ratzinger himself is armored like a tank with wealth, power, and papal infallibility. Good thing he's 82 years old, not long for this world, a fact for which we can all be thankful. Perhaps, then, the only thing that can truly change the Church is the revulsion and outcry of its millions of followers demanding change, revolution, upheaval. And millions of Catholics worldwide appear to be demanding just that. The Vatican is under unprecedented pressure to make amends, modify its repellent ways, maybe usher in a true reformist pope in the wake of one of the ugliest holy leaders in recent history. Then again, maybe none of it will have any effect. After all, few Catholics of any modern stripe actually pay any attention to the Vatican's childish dictums and archaic declarations, even its scandals. The Pope is largely irrelevant. Turning a blind eye to the real history of the Church and the nasty cadre of creepy old men who rule it, that's just part of being Catholic. Meanwhile, the stunning numbers just keep coming. The Vatican has now reportedly spent between $2 and $3 billion in legal fees and quiet reparations to the thousands of molested and abused. That's just the current number. It will be growing exponentially because the cases are nowhere near complete. They just keep coming, and they probably always will. I wasn't kidding above. I firmly believe we have this apocalypse thing all wrong, backwards. The second coming has nothing whatsoever to do with some melodramatic return of a bearded, sandal-wearing hippie anarchist who comes back to take away all the booze, porn, and tattoos as he whisks away the trembling true believers to a land of harps, minivans, and horrible sex. Wrong. The rapture is when the major karmic roadblocks of man, all the Vatican's, popes, temples, cults, megachurches, and even most organized religions all stagger and collapse under the weight of their inherent hypocrisy. All the oppressed sexuality, the homophobia, the misogyny, the fear of science, the denial of true spiritual source. You could call it one of the greatest stories. You could call it one of the greatest ironies of man, to wit, only when our supposedly holy dogmas, institutions, and leaders fail, can the human soul ever truly be free. Ah, Mark Morford, Uncle Mike's Story Corner, brought to you by your friends. In the Holy See. Mark Morford writes for the San Francisco Chronicle. You can get him online at sfgate.com, I think. One of the greatest writers in America right now. Mark Morford. I know most of you know who he is. Incredible writer. He is the natural replacement, if that's the right word, for Hunter Thompson. Although Mark, since he writes for a national publication, is a little bit restricted in his language, too. You know what I'm saying? All right, we have a break coming up. When we come back, we're going to take some phone calls. If you would like to tune in, I mean, if you'd like to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. I have one more little thing from David Korn, and then on to your phone calls. 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
When the rapture comes, I'm with the God Squad. I'll tell you what, Jesus Christ is gonna kick your butt. I'm with the God Squad. Grab your gun. I'm coming to you live from Armageddon. Don't need to be teaching no biology. You'll learn all you need to learn at my ministry. Attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. Hear my battle cry down in Hollywood. I'm with the God Squad. There's no place to run. I'm paving the way to.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Molloy.
10 before the hour. David Korn has a quick piece here about the nuclear summit. Remember the nuclear summit that occurred the other day? 46 nations showed up at Barack Obama's invitation. David Korn writes, on Monday and Tuesday, Obama convened a historic gathering in Washington to deal with the most urgent threat facing the globe, nuclear terrorism. Never before have so many world leaders gathered to discuss together how to thwart one of the greatest nightmares imaginable. 47 nations were represented. Though no sweeping treaties or agreements were reached, Obama did succeed on two important fronts. He placed the issue of controlling and securing nuclear material that could be used by terrorists at the top of the global to-do list, and he encouraged nations to take their own individual steps. There's still much that the nations of the world, including the U.S., must do to prevent highly enriched uranium from slipping into the hands of terrorists. It only takes a lump the size of a grapefruit to make a bomb. But with this summit, Obama did move the world in a safer direction. He nudged it toward policies that could lessen the odds that one or more of our cities are incinerated by a nuclear weapon cobbled together by a band of evildoers. Everyone, even people who believe Obama is a Kenyan-born secret Muslim with a covert plan for imposing socialism on the United States, should be grateful for that, right? Well, maybe not. After Obama's summit was done, I was looking to see how prominent conservatives and Republicans were reacting to it on the Twitter sphere. I found a lot of silence. Newt Gingrich tweeted on Tuesday about a meeting where he would, quote, outline 2010 and 2012 big choice themes. 2 + 2 = 4 is key concept, end quote. Don't ask me what that means. But not a peep about the summit. Sarah Palin, ditto. Karl Rove, zip. These folks are all active Twitterers, ever ready to share their opinions and thoughts in 140 characters or less, but none saw fit to do it regarding the nuclear security summit. To the list, you can add other conservative tweeters. John McCain, Michelle Bachmann, Mitt Romney, Tim Pawlenty, John Boehner, Boehner. But Boehner did find time to tweet about the possibility that sex offenders in jail will be eligible for erectile dysfunction medication. Oh. Some of these folks may have commented on the summit in other forums. A cursory Google News search, however, didn't turn up much. At an Americans for Tax Reform breakfast meeting, Gingrich, while discussing other matters, did refer to the summit as a charade. Rush Limbaugh's website indicates he devoted more time to ranting about Obama leaning forward or bowing when he shook hands with President Hu Jintao of China than to the substance of the summit. Liz Cheney's Keep America Safe site likewise zeroed in on the bow. It also focused on the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel had canceled his plans to attend the event. I spotted nothing at Michelle Malkin's website about the summit. Over at the homepage of redstate.com, a prominent conservative site, nothing. There was, however, a post suggesting that Obama did not really attend one of his daughter's soccer games on Saturday morning. As Obama strives to lessen the chances of nuclear terrorism, are folks on the right putting their heads over their ears and saying, I can't see you, I can't see you? After all, it's not easy to reconcile Obama's endeavors to save Americans from perishing in a nuclear holocaust with the argument that he's weak on national security. Actually, Obama's efforts in this area might be the most important actions of his presidency. And it might just be too difficult for the conservative critics to acknowledge this work or to thank him. Conservatives are scum. They're pond scum. They're totally pointless. They're to be laughed at, not pitied, laughed at, made fun of, and eventually eliminated from the political scene. You don't want to talk? All right. 877-996-2556 is the number. I thought you guys just were demanding to make some phone calls. No? All right, let's talk to Shelley in Fresno. Hey, Shelley.
Mike Malloy.
Shelley.
What a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah? Why?
I drive home every night in the California foothills and you're the voice of reason. You say things that I think.
Be careful. Be careful you don't run off the road.
I pull over. We aren't allowed to drive and use our cell phones anymore. But mm-hmm. I just wanted to say thank you for that.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you, Shelley. Yeah. I'm glad you found the program. I'm glad you tuned in.
Well, I also want to say that the conservatives may be pond scum, but they're getting their way.
Yeah, they are.
I think that it's a conspiracy theory, of course, but I think that headed up by the Bush crime family, there was a little group of billionaires once upon a time that wanted to be trillionaires,
mm-hmm.
and they made it. And they made it on the backs of foolish people like Tea Partiers and...
Oh, sure. They're real. They're like chickens waiting to be plucked.
Yes.
And they're being plucked very well, thank you, by... Mm-hmm. By people like Sarah Palin. Oh, absolutely.
And war criminals like George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, so we have trillionaires now. Yeah.
And an extra 30 or 40 billionaires. And
yeah.
and why not? I mean, if the sheep are there for shearing, might as well get out the clippers, right?
Right.
This is America.
And they do. They're getting their way.
That's for sure. Hey, thanks for checking in, Shelley. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right, take care. Take care. Oh, man. I seriously don't understand what the teabaggers get out of standing around with their thumbs in their ears cheering for Sarah Palin. I don't get it. Or for any of this nonsense. I really don't. Oh, well. Oh, well. All right, we have a break. We'll be back. and take some phone calls. Oh, now you're calling in. Okay, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. The number here is 877-996-2556. Let us take some calls. Bob is in Sonoma, California. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Mike. I wanted to comment on Michael Moore's statement that our health care, and I agree, is this health care plan is the American Motor Pacer, corporation Pacer of healthcare. But I say this is our first car, and the brakes aren't necessarily good, but the tires are fair.
okay. So?
I mean, you can carry the analogy on if you wanted to, like, now he's going on, like, you get your first car, you get a better job, right?
Right.
Now, You get the better car. Now you go and you take care of the Wall Street problems and the mm-hmm. financial mess that we're in and regulate.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. I'm just listening to what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wanting a little feedback and hoping that.
Let me put it this way. Wall Street. And we know what that term means. All-encompassing term that means the financial services industry and the commercial banking industry in this country. It's never going to be regulated. Never. It's too late for that. It was regulated with the Glass-Steagall Act back in the Roosevelt years, and it was done so specifically to prevent the kinds of horror that we've had in this country now. Thanks to these predatory bastards. But corporate America has so taken over the political system that to think for a moment that legislation is going to pass intact, without any amendments, without any changes, that more or less reinstates the Glass-Steagall Act is to be, entertaining hallucinogenic dreams. It's just not going to happen.
Mike.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to interrupt, but
no,
I've
ahead.
Heard a lot of negativity, and if Kant never did anything but go in his pants.
Okay.
No, I mean, so you can't continually beat the oh my God, there's nothing we can do drum. If you do that,
hold on just a second, Bob. You didn't let me finish. It's never going to happen. Period. Now, if you want to debate that sometime, send me an email. The only way that the banking industry is ever going to change is when it is totally and completely socialized. When the federal government, when we have a national bank that is truly a national bank, like the Bank of England, like the Bank of Canada, like the Bank of Singapore, like the Bank of India, where the banking industry is taken out of the hands of the predatory capitalists, and it's placed in the hands of government agencies where banks do what banks are supposed to do. They loan money at 6%, and they pay their depositors 4%. And in that process, they make money. The banks, honest to God, make money. And the banks do the one function that they're supposed to do, and that is to keep capital flowing. That's not what banks do now. They don't keep capital flowing. They don't give a damn about capital flow unless it's into their pockets. So, Bob, listen, the next time you want to call me up and bitch at me because I am negative, stop for a moment and consider whether or not you have a solution. When I say the system is broke completely, it's not because I'm a banking expert or I'm a financial expert, but I have banking financial experts that contribute to the program. And I read, economists, and, I also am a reasonably intelligent human being. So, as far as the banking system in this country, it is utterly and absolutely destroyed. And until it is taken over by the federal government, until it becomes another part of the socialist changes that are needed in this country. You know, I've talked about Malloy's democratic socialism before. Maybe you were busy, but, you know, when I talked about it before, let me see if I can find it here. But there are several industries in a capitalist society that need to be, especially a capitalist society like this one, that need to be regulated. Oh, here it is. Nationalize the following industries: banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, and weapons production. Now, weapons production, the ultimate goal of nationalizing that is eliminating weapons production altogether. Now, before I have some right-wing genius write in and say, "You're nothing but a GD communist," let me, and not that this will make any sense to you, but I also believe it. You know, I believe in a mixed economy at this point. Small businesses should be left alone. Family farms left alone. High-tech firms left alone. All sorts of startup businesses, as long as labor and environmental laws are followed. It's very simple. It's so simple. But banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, and weapons production, they all should be owned by we, the people. And until that time, the banking industry will continue to do what the banking industry has always done. I've said it before. It's like, you know, why does a dog stop periodically and lick his privates? And the answer is because he can. Why does the banking industry, on an intergenerational basis, continue to rip off and destroy the very system on which they feed? Like, what was it that Matt Taibbi called it in Rolling Stone? A giant blood-sucking vampire squid attached to the face of America. That's what this filthy, disgusting, vampiric entity does. So don't call my program and talk to me about whether or not I'm negative, okay? I'm not negative. I'm the most positive talk show host you'll ever hear. Absolutely. But in order to understand the way out of the maze, we've got to understand how we got in and the horror if we continue to stay here, which is exactly what predatory capitalism wants. So, will the banking industry ever be regulated under an administration, a presidential administration? No, of course not. Absolutely not. Certainly not now. What we need is a form of a bloodless revolution that brings democratic socialism to the United States. It's very simple. Democratic socialism, or social democracy, if that's a little easier for people to deal with. Democratic socialism a mixed economy. Certain things are private ownership. Certain things are public ownership. And as far as I'm concerned, the five things that should be public ownership are the five that I mentioned. And the ones that are already public ownership, like the school system, you know, you can have both. You got private schools, religious schools, public schools, whatever. I leave the education system out of it. But those five industries, but especially banking, there has to be a Bank of America, like there's a Bank of England or a Bank of wherever, where these people, you know, why did Canada escape all this stuff? Bob, huh? Was that his name, Bob? Why is not Canada going through a complete screwball meltdown like we are in this country? That's your assignment for tonight. Find out why. Okay, break time. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. I got an email here from Irish Dave. Mike, the better example of what you're talking about is the North Dakota State Bank. The Bank of England, not so much. Okay. Thanks, Irish Dave.
Seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Back to your calls. Andre is in Oakland, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Andre.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, I was trying to give the Tea Party folks an opportunity to sort of figure out. I'm generally curious about, well, who are these tea bag folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I did a little research to sort of just check them out because it seems like CNN and these other people seem to want to frame these people as some grassroots folks. But, if, you know, I looked up, went on the Federal Election Commission website, looked at who were some of the people contributing to Sarah Palin, whatever. And so one of the guys is Joe Allenbaugh and Charles, I guess his name is Hobb, and some of these other folks. It's a whole bunch of folks from, like, the Carlyle Group. This guy, Joe Allenbaugh, was from the Republican Party, 2000 campaign manager for George Bush. So it's all these grudgy old commodity people who are just mad at the world, right? And so I tried to figure out, well, what do they stand for? And I can't find anything on the website. So I really don't know why they get such publicity for the Tea Party. They're not really a party either. They're just a whole bunch of mad ass.
Well, the reason they get publicity is because most, if not all, of their publicity comes from television. Print medium really doesn't give a damn about these people because they're boring, they're stupid, they say the same things over and over again, they don't have a clue. They're 98% white, they're about 80% retired, they get all kinds, they're on all sorts of doles, government doles, corporate doles, retirement doles, whatever. They're a bunch of phonies who have too much time on their hands. During the 60s, they were too afraid to smoke a joint and they never got laid. And so they got all this, they got all this pent up energy. So, it's the truth. They never did psychedelics. So here they are. They've reached late middle age. They're in their 50s and 60s and, don't have a pot to pee in or a window to throw it out of. So they don't know what to do. So along comes, this group of thugs that you just named and tells them, look, we're going to give you some meaning to your life, and they go for it. That's, these are people that are just looking for some reason to keep breathing. They don't understand the Constitution. They don't understand American law. They don't understand the society. They don't realize that they are in a minority now because they happen to be Caucasian. They don't understand anything except what their little brains are fed by real nutcases like, Beck and Limbaugh and Palin and the rest of this, this collection of circus clowns.
Yeah, Bachman.
Yeah, right. So.
Oh, Lord.
I guess the point is, Andre, I'm trying to understand who these people are. They're losers. These are lunatics, loons, losers, freaks, morons. And they're having their day. They're getting lots of publicity. After the November election, they will shut up and go back to whatever they were doing and start reaping the benefits of having a Democratic a president, a Democratic Congress, and laws and rules and legislation passed to make them even fatter and whiter. So that's just the way it goes. Not that I have, great faith in the Democratic Party, but it's damn sure a lot better than the Republican Party. I know. Don't send me emails, everybody, telling me they're both sides of the same coin. I know, I understand that. But that's the best answer I can give you. These are losers. These are people who never accomplished anything. They damn sure don't know how to spell. Have you seen some of their signs?
Oh, my goodness. Deficit.
Can you believe the way they spell simple, two-syllable words, in some cases one-syllable words? It's amazing. These are very ignorant people, and they don't have anything to do, Andre. They're frustrated. They missed everything on the first go-around in life, and they think they're going to get something this time, which they're not. Andre, thanks, man. I hope that helps. I appreciate you checking in. Teabaggers are losers. They're just complete dummies. And they're easily manipulated. And the people manipulating them know that. They're very easy. Look at Sarah Palin. She was making 120 grand a year as a loser government, governor of Alaska, and decides to quit and go out on the, I'm going to get you circuit. And so far this year, she's made $12 million. And it all comes from these morons and jerkwads, every single penny of it. So y'all keep doing it. Like I say, come November, you got to see the emails I get. Boy, you're going to find out, you call me bastard, after the November elections. You're going to find out, then your party. Look, in first place, Democrats are not my party. In the second place, come November, the elections that all these bag freaks are waiting for, I think you folks are in for a big surprise. I really do. But anyway, play nice until it's time for y'all to go home. When the street lights come on, you have to go home, brush your teeth, and get your asses in bed. We'll be right back.
To listen to right-wing radio, here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. A couple of quick emails here. This is from WH. Hi, Mike. The bank in North Dakota is the only state-owned bank in the nation. It has done very well over the years and has added billions to the state of North Dakota's coffers. Now, as you may recall, Byron Dorgan is not running for re-election, and our governor, John Hoeven, is running for senator. More than likely, he will get the Senate seat. Now, what the Republicans and the T-tards don't realize is that John Hoeven was the CEO of the Bank of North Dakota before he was governor of North Dakota. That's right. The soon-to-be Republican senator of one of the reddest states in the country ran a socialist bank, America's only socialist bank. Can you imagine how Beck's and Bunny Ranch Hannity's heads will explode when this comes out? I would like to see that. I'd like to see their heads explode, you know, teeth, hair, and eyeballs and gray matter splattered all over the interior of their studios. But they will dance around it. It won't matter. Nothing that exists in the real world matters to people like Hannity or Beck or Limbaugh or Palin or the rest of these freaks. Nothing. You cannot reach them. They are so far under the influence of their own opiates or opioids, opioids, brain chemicals, to be unreachable. And Prairie 2 writes, in regard to the banks, the big banks were leveraged at least 100-1. That means in debt, right? When the collapse came, some people say it was more like 1,000-1 if you really counted the losses they had taken prior to the meltdown. Anyway, their losses since have far exceeded their assets. The government would take them over if they were the farmer's bank on the corner. Even allowing them to loot the stock market and suck money out of the oil trade is not going to make them solvent. The teabaggers complained about their taxes being so high, but they are bailing out the banks every time they buy gas, and their 401k is just an empty shell. Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? I wonder if the teabaggers will ever get off the morphine drip and realize what's going on. I doubt it. Steven's in Burbank listening on Sirius. Hey, Steven.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hey.
I just called in to talk to Kathy about don't feel bad about not getting people calling you up, because from my point of view, what it is like we are so enraptured by the commentary, whereas we are receiving so much enlightenment, and it's so spot on that, you know, who could add to that, you know?
Cool.
Who wants to be the flaw that brings out the perfection? So Kathy put me on the board anyway. And Kathy is in her own right an excellent commentator and excellent insight. And I'd love to give shout-outs to you and to Kathy and to some other callers. AC was excellent the other night. We have a guy that I just love dearly. He's Arnold from Durham, North Carolina, and it seems like we have a community here where we can communicate. And I'm not here calling you up to, like, give you a big compliment or anything like that. I am only voicing an observation.
Well, that's a nice thing to say. Normally, you know, the calls roll in. They are now. It's just that sometimes I think you're right. I think a lot of people get carried away with, you know, watching or listening. And, you know, I get a lot of emails from people that say, don't do any callers. Just keep that stream of consciousness nonsense going because it's, you know, it's entertaining. And, you know, I can do it either way. Can have people call in or not. But I like to hear what people got to say. That's why I read so many emails on the program. I think we read more emails on this show than probably any talk radio, left or right, on the air. I really do.
I agree with that. And that's one of the reasons I don't have a computer, is because I'd be probably bugging you so much that you couldn't stand it anymore.
Well, I truly do believe that most of the people, not all, I'm not going to say that, but most of the people listen to this program, or a good percentage, are a hell of a lot smarter than I am, or understand these issues that we bring up better than I do. And that's one of the reasons I rely on the email so much, and I have all these experts like Bruce Enberg and Kay Petrini and Bob Alexander and Sharon Gordy and Bridget Woofen and all the people who contribute, because they are, you know, they're if they don't know more than me, they're at least well-versed, more well-versed than I am. So it works out pretty well.
Well, I heard on one show once, it was Barbara Ehrenreich on KPFK, and she was having an interview with Sonali Cole Hutker, and they were talking about this, the secret, you know, and all this wishful thinking nonsense crap, you know, and Sonali mentioned something, and then Barbara said, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And then I said, you know what? now I don't feel so bad.
Right, there you go.
But Mikey, you are smarter than you think you are, and I like to be self-denigrating to myself and all that, you know, and downplay it, you know, because I don't want to get the big-ass ego, you know. I don't want to have, you know, the Indians, the Native Americans had a headband. And the reason for that was they didn't want their heads to swell up. You know, they kept things in perspective.
All right.
And you do it excellently, and I can accuse you of being an intellectual, but you might take it as an insult.
All right, well, thanks. Those are nice words. I appreciate it. Thanks for checking in, Steve.
Okay, boss.
All right, take care. Take care. SK is in L.A., listening on KTLK. Hello, SK.
Hey, Mr. Mikey. I haven't talked to you in about 2 years or so.
Is this a real person? Your voice sounds very strange.
This is SK in LA. I'm calling on Skype. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. It just, I thought maybe, oh, never mind. So what's up?
Why do you always have to, that last guy was another KPFK guy.
Yeah.
I was just calling because I haven't talked to you. Well, my last call, I called in as Renfro from Dracula. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I'm trying hard. I think I remember, yeah.
But I'm just calling because tomorrow's Tea Party Day. Are you not celebrating?
Tomorrow? Thursday, the 15th? Oh, that's right, tax day. That's right.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't mind paying taxes, although I got in a lot of trouble with IRS for owing them money, but it's all been taken care of now. That was years and years and years ago. But I don't mind paying taxes at all. I think taxes are like the price of admission. It's like going to a movie theater. If you want to see a good film, you plunk down your 10, 12 bucks and you go see it.
Yeah. I want to also thank you for helping me with I launched a show a year ago that has become somewhat successful, and I have to thank you for the inspiration for it, and all of the listeners that I have are basically from your show, almost 100% of them.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I want to thank you because you enlightened me into a way of speaking that I had always encapsulated in my mind but never had been able to verbalize or extrude outward. I know I pissed you off many times. We had many fun years of me sending you pictures of you with boobs and stuff and weird stuff.
What?
And
I think you may have me confused with somebody else. Pictures of boobs? I don't know. I think I remember you calling SK, but I don't remember. I remember boob pictures. Listen, thanks. I appreciate it. I got to move on. I appreciate you checking in, though. I hope you're always there and you always call. Now, what is this? This is from Dinah. Hello, Mr. Malloy. I wanted to let you know that I listened to your show in between Fox Radio and Rusty Humphreys when the commercials start. Ooh. You sound intelligent most of the time, but I can't understand why you revert to name-calling when you can't think of what to say to defend the liberal movement. The liberal movement. I heard you call Sarah Palin a bitch tonight on your show, and you also called the conservative movement pond scum. I'm sure you just did this to inflame your target audience. I feel I have an open mind and read as much as I can to be an informed citizen. However, your schoolboy name-calling really diminishes your credit and makes your program insignificant. If the commercials weren't so long, I wouldn't bother giving you a short listen. But it just reinforces my decision to be on the conservative side. Thank you, but no. Dinah. Well, Dinah, bless your little pea-picking heart. I just really appreciate you listening. I appreciate the fact that you took time to write. And I know you listen every night. Fox Radio, my ass. Rusty Humphreys, my ass. You know that you're a regular listener. It's okay, Dinah. We're glad you're there, okay? You're a little tight-assed, but we do appreciate you, you know, the fact that you're there. Do you squeak when you walk? I just wonder. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy for the Liberal Movement.
seems we can't get along. No matter what I do, it don't appeal to you. Makes no difference whether I'm right or I'm wrong. If we can't be sweethearts, there's much you can do. Please don't talk about me when I'm gone. Oh, honey, though our friendship ceases from now on. And listen, if you can't say anything real nice, it's better not to talk at all, is my advice.
Your calls. Mike is in Chicago listening online. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How are you? I haven't talked to you. This is to Dinah because she's a Palin fan, obviously.
Yeah.
Maybe she wants to tell Sarah Palin next time she asks how that hopey changey thing is working out for us.
Yeah.
The stock market's back up to 11,000 and 32 million more people have health care, so the moron can shut her mouth. But that's besides the point.
Yeah, well, you can't tell the Dinahs of the world anything. They know it all. They've got all the answers, and they worship at the throne of Glenn Beck.
Well, you know what's so funny is, did you ever notice anyone who watches Fox News, that's their only source of news?
Yes.
They don't watch anything else.
Yeah, and
everything else is just the liberal media.
Right, and it's not really news. It is brainwashing, it is propaganda, and it's and it suits them fine. It suits them just fine.
It's infotainment,
right.
You know. But the reason I wanted to call, Mike, is a lot of people aren't aware of this, but in 2002, when Bernard Law was kicked out of the Boston Archdiocese,
right.
He was a cardinal. He was sent to St. Peter of the Basilica to be the archpriest. So he's only responsible and he only is accountable to the Pope himself. He's right next door. In a way, he was demoted, but he was promoted.
Are there children in his new responsibilities?
Oh, this gets better. This gets better. On April 4th through 7th, when the Pope John Paul II died, he was buried there. The first person to say a memorial mass at St. Peter's Basilica was Bernard Law. So can you answer me how in the world, if you got the whole Vatican together and they said, who's going to say the memorial mass for John Paul II? Let's get Bernard Law.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then now you watch on Fox and they're saying that these radicals are trying to sue and have Bernard Law extradited to the United States. Well, these radicals just happen to be Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins.
Mm-hmm.
They're not radicals. The radicals are the ones raping the young boys. They're the
right.
Radicals.
Well, I think Dawkins and Hitchens are planning, are attempting to get barristers, I believe is the term, in England to prepare arrest warrants for the Nazi Pope when he goes to England later on this year.
Yeah, but what I don't understand is this whole thing with Roman Polanski. I mean, everyone's up in arms about that, which is wrong, but yet the minute you mention the Pope, everyone's
right.
Like, ooh, you can't go there. Well, if I was in a Boy Scout troop and I knew that these pack leaders were raping boys, my parents wouldn't send me to the Boy Scouts, but yet people are more than willing to send their kids to be altar boys.
Well, that's because the church, and not just the Catholic Church, but all religions, they have a real hammerlock on the minds of people, and that is if you don't believe or you don't join or you don't do what we say, you will burn in hell forever, eaten by scorpions, spiders, and snakes. There will be no reprieve. Your ass is doomed for all eternity. So believe the way we tell you to believe.
don't question it.
Right, don't question it. Believe what we tell you, or the alternative is eternal damnation. And for the most part, they all say that, at least the you know, the really crazy religions like Islam and Christianity, they're just they're it's like a freaknik. I mean, it's just totally out of control, man. Totally out of control.
Yeah, and Mike, really quickly, I happen to catch, there's a movie that Christopher Hitchens, actually, he came out with the book, The Trials of Henry Kissinger, and I saw the DVD. I just talked to Kathy. I'm going to send you a copy of it.
Oh, thank you. Man, I appreciate it.
It's unbelievable, because I'm 42 myself, and when I went to school in the 70s in grammar school, they never, I mean, everything was history of the Western world with Indians and history of the Western world, and you never learned anything about nowadays history.
Right.
And I was never aware of just how much he had to do with Cambodia and Vietnam.
And
I watched this documentary last night, and I said to myself, he should be in The Hague quicker than George Bush should be in The Hague.
Well, he should. And Henry Kissinger's bloody handprints are all over both hemispheres. And thanks, Mark. Mike, I appreciate it. His bloody handprints are all over Central America, certainly South America. About the only country in the Western Hemisphere that escaped the blood-sucking and blood-letting of Henry Kissinger was Canada. His bloody handprints are all over the Middle East, all over South Asia, all over Southeastern Asia. I mean, Henry Kissinger is a world-class killer with absolutely no respect for human life whatsoever. None. None. Absolutely none. And his, you know, the organizing principle inside Henry Kissinger's mind has been unbridled, predatory, capitalistic power. And if that means hundreds of thousands of people have to die to bring that to fruition, well, that's just the way it goes. I don't think Kissinger ever used the term collateral damage, but he was the one that said, I'm paraphrasing, that American military personnel during the Vietnam horror were totally dispensable. Henry Kissinger had absolutely no respect or use for American soldiers other than to throw them into battle with the hope that we would take over Vietnam and save it from godless communism. Well, you know, Vietnam has fit very comfortably into the family of predatory capitalist nations, and they're doing quite well, thank you. And the 59,000 U.S. servicemen who were slaughtered in that conflict, and the 2.5 million Indochinese who were slaughtered in that conflict, are, to Henry Kissinger, nothing. Nothing. They're dust in the wind. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.